It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the first Mac Break Weekly of the post-Apple Watch era. We'll talk about the Apple Watch, also about Apple earnings, an amazing quarter. From MacCast, Adam Christensen joins Renee and Andy and me. Let's talk Mac next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 452, recorded Tuesday, April 28th, 2015. That THWACK thing. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. A good IT pro is always learning, and IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your IT skills and knowledge up to date. IT Pro TV offers engaging courses, now with ethical hacker training. Stream to your Roku, Chromecast, computer, or mobile device. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak30. And by LegalZoom. If you're looking to incorporate, form an LLC or nonprofit, get a DBA or more, LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. LegalZoom, not a law firm, but it can connect you with an independent attorney. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news. Look who's here, Adam Christensen. From MacCast.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Adam.
Good to see you again. It's been way too long.
I know. I can't believe it. Well, I'm glad to get you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Things going well?
Everything's going very well, yeah.
That's good. Well, I'm sure that there'll be a little bit of talk of something having to do with Apple today, so.
There's a few things going on in the Apple world.
Fit right in.
Yeah.
Also with us, Mr. Rene Ritchie from iMore.com.
Good to see you. Talk louder, Leo. I'm listening on my watch.
Yeah. Hello. Hello.
What?
I can't hear you. Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Greetings. I'm wearing a watch that needs to be charged roughly once every 2 years.
Beat like that. An animal.
Hey, I can beat that. I've got one of them solar charging watches. I got a watch that charges just from walking around.
Mine charges on pure awesome.
Before we get to the watch, let's talk about results. Quarterly results were announced yesterday for the quarter ending in March, which is Apple's Q2, right? Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yep.
$13.6 billion profit. Not shabby. Yeah.
What's that between friends, Leo?
Not shabby. It only looks scant when compared to the previous quarter.
So wait a minute. You mean that the fact they had that incredible quarter after releasing the two most exciting phones in the past 3 or 4 years, that wasn't the indication that that was going to be quarters like that forever? Hey, oh, man, it is, cold compresses for the stock analysts.
For Q2, it is kind of a quarter like that. I mean, it is a massive increase,
a 33% increase. Their Q2 this time was better than their holiday last year, I think.
Yeah.
I have to double check that.
Pretty remarkable.
That's insane.
Pretty remarkable. Gross margin, 40%. That's up. They increased their dividend and they bought back more stock, but you know, that's really more about the shareholders and about Apple's results. What we care about is how Apple as a company is doing. And I guess the answer would be pretty darn good.
Can't hear you through all the money, Leo.
A lot of this because of China, apparently. They sold 61.2 million iPhones in the quarter. That's a little off the torrid pace of the Q4, which was 75.5 million, but still not shabby.
Do you remember when we were wondering if they'd ever hit 10 million in a
year?
Or
not shabby. We're talking 135 million in 6 months. Unbelievable. And of course, a year ago, year to year is what you really compare quarter to quarter. Q2 last year, 43.7 million iPhones. So a significant, like 50% increase. That's a new March quarter record. Mac sales did well. I always like Mac sales to do well because I kind of have a little bit of a thing for the Macintosh. 4.5 million units sold. That's up from 4.1 a year ago. Mm-hmm. iPad down 23%.
Yep.
It's just failing slowly, bit by
bit.
Well,
still ahead of the tablet market.
Only a million a week. Come on. What kind of business is that?
Also, I would say that creatively, if there's one tablet that's really holding the vanguard of the future of 21st century computing, it is the iPad. Because both Apple and Microsoft are taking steps back and creating tablet-like devices that nonetheless run desktop operating systems and have those sort of limitations. Whereas Apple is really the only one that's really pushing it forward and saying, no, this is a legitimate computing device and we're going to continue to make it. It might be like their version of like Microsoft of Google's internet-based stations hovering in the air on helium balloons. We don't care if there's no profit in this. This is a good idea and we're going to continue to make it held aloft by the money that we're making off of the iPhone.
Slate had an interesting interpretation, saying iPad sales were down due to increasing Mac sales. And I guess with the MacBook, you could
say
that.
It's iPhone 6 Plus and it's the new Ultra Max because it's hitting them on both ends.
Yeah. Also on the Windows side of it, we're seeing now that Intel is finally shipping these really, really good and powerful mobility chips without that have that can serve desktop operating systems and also don't require a lot of heat. A lot of people who might have been getting 9.7-inch iPads because it was the only way to get a really good light travel computer now have a lot of other options that are a lot less trouble if you're not interested in being part of the future of computing. And then there's, of course, the pressure from larger size phones, which are now pretty much stock and standard. So it's going to be interesting to see if Apple is content with the iPad. If you look at the lines on the graph for the Mac, it's pretty flat. There's sort of bumping up and down. It goes up and down, but it's pretty much consistent since 2012. And there's no chance of Apple ever canceling the Mac either. It's possible that they could be just simply satisfied with that the iPad is going to find its natural level, and it's still going to be worth being part of our product portfolio.
So one other factor worth considering, and that is if you look at the iPad Air 2, the processor in there is ridiculous. I think it's one of the first times you could look and say iOS is actually holding this device back. They're doing engineering and chip design now that I think, frankly, shames Broadwell in many ways, especially when you include the delays that Intel had bringing Broadwell to market. And when you and Apple's not slowing down. They're not a company that goes, the A7 is fine. We'll keep that in tablets for three years. We'll get the most money. No, they're telling these guys to run as fast as they can. So when you see an A9 this year, it's going to be even better. And there are rumors that Apple's doing iPad Pro and that there might be something happening with iOS on the iPad specifically to address this. But I think that there's just too many smart people who actually like the iPad working on it at Apple for it to stay a marginal device for very long.
So somebody asked them this at the quarterly call, and you listened to the call, I know, Renee. So, this was the response, and I don't know if it was Luca or Tim. Somebody said, follow up on iPad. What will it take to re-accelerate iPads? Are you seeing Tim? It was Tim answering this. Number one, we have to stop, and this is interesting, stop having the situations where we sell through more than we sell in. What does that mean, Renee?
They had more channel inventory than they needed. I think they adjusted by a million units.
He said inventory correction over a million units. Have we cannibalization? Yes. Clearly seeing from iPhone on the other side from the Mac. As I've said before, I've never worried about that. It is what it is. Tim is very zen. It will stabilize. Not sure precisely when, but I'm confident it will. IBM partnership is in its early stages in terms of bearing fruit here. Yeah. That's the enterprise side of that. And that could really be a
That's another big deal. I think the biggest indication that Apple predicts a long, long future for the iPad is, like Renee said, the iPad Air 2 is almost suspiciously overpowered for what it does right now. And so you can really, you don't have to have a wild imagination to think, gee, I wonder what iOS 9 is going to do, or I wonder what suite of apps they're predicting or they're already planning for that's going to require this much processing power and this much application RAM.
Yeah. It's going to have a very specific place in the mix. And I think that's the other thing that a lot of people are kind of glossing over, right? Is it has its space. It's going to be in a smaller level than an iPhone. It's above where, they're selling units of Macs. And I think it's tapering out too, because I think people are finding their sort of place for it and their use case for it. So like myself, I've noticed since getting the larger screen iPhone, I am using my iPad a little bit less, and I may not upgrade it every year, but I'm going to continue to own an iPad. And I think there's a lot of people in that space where they have that iPad. It's the thing that I grab when I'm going to sit down on the couch, when I'm going to relax. It's the thing that I grab when I'm going to go to the coffee shop and I don't want to drag my MacBook Pro along. So I don't think it's going away, but I think it's just not going to be, rolling in those huge numbers when, like it did when it first was released, but it's still a significant product in Apple's lineup and will continue to be for a long time.
Tim also said that the data makes him feel better than the sales do. First-time buyer rates, that is people buying their first iPad, 40% in the U.S., but 70% in China. China really is the bright spot for both the iPhone and even the iPad. He says those aren't numbers you'd get if the market were saturated. He says, I don't think that the theory of the saturation is correct. We also see usage numbers off the charts. In other words, people really are using it. Customer satisfaction at or near 100%. Those numbers along with intent to buy, everything looks fantastic. E-commerce numbers. I'm reading the kind of MacRumors sketchy little transcription here. My belief is that as inventory plays out, as we make some continued investments in our product pipeline that we're doing, we've planned for some time inventory playing out, enterprise taking over. The iPad is still an extremely good business in the long term. When it begins to grow again, I won't predict, but I do think it will, says Tim Cook. Maybe with a 12-inch, pressure-sensitive iPad, maybe that's...
Force touch.
Is the Mac... Yeah, force touch. Ooh. Yeah. Is the MacBook the 12-inch that they were talking about, or is this something separate?
No,
definitely
separate.
Something separate.
Okay.
Yeah. As I say, it's an interesting product to me because just like Microsoft Surface 3, not the Surface Pro 3, but the new Surface 3, it does indicate that it makes Rasa, when the iPad first came out, I really did see that this is finally we're breaking free of the idea of a keyboard connected to a screen by a hinge. This really is the future of computing. And it does seem that both of these products is sort of a step back saying, no, we just want a super, super ultra light notebook that's as light as an iPad with a battery life like an iPad, but people seem to want a desktop operating system. But there's plenty of room for the iPad to continue to make new stuff. It's interesting to think about what they would do with a 12-inch iPad now that they have this 12-inch MacBook that is so wonderful in so many ways. If they're going for pro users, it's going to be interesting to hear them tell the story of why someone wants to have a 12-inch iOS device instead of a 12-inch macOS device.
Oyve says in the chat room, it's going to take an iOS improvement update to move iPad sales again. Others, what we've been saying, maybe a hardware update. It's clear that the iPad as it stands is just going to chug along. If it's going to come back, it's going to have to be kicked by something.
Still also its acceleration curve. If you look at it, it has still sold more units in a shorter amount of time than the iPhone has. And the iPhone is a massively successful business.
It only looks so small compared to the iPhone.
Exactly. Well, its acceleration is insane. When you have an acceleration that fast, and I've used this analogy before, if there's a 100-mile-an-hour speed limit on a highway and you're in a Lamborghini and you're in a Toyota, your acceleration is hugely different, but your top speed is still the same. So the iPad got there very, very quickly. And now you're seeing the result of that quarter after quarter. It's pretty much at top speed right now.
Of course, China was big because it was Chinese New Year, which I don't know, but I gather is a big buying. It's kind of like the equivalent of our Christmas in a way.
Yeah.
You get a red envelope full of money. Call.
Yeah. So they set a record for revenue in China. I didn't know this. There are already 21 Apple stores in China on their way to 40 stores by next year. That's kind of amazing. And the Chinese... sales up 71% year over year. So in China, huge quarter, primarily led by iPhone. Mac unit sales in China, though, up 31% as well. That's kind of surprising. The Chinese, I think, said we aren't going to buy any more Windows machines. Maybe that means we're going to buy Macs.
Tim pointed out, too, and I didn't know this. I'm not that up on China, but he also mentioned, you know, there is a large growing middle class in China, and that seems to be benefiting Apple.
And developers in China are doing okay. Apple says they've paid $5 billion now to developers in China for Chinese apps. So a really strong quarter. It was clear when Apple launched their China strategy. You know, started seeing slides about China and Weibo and various China social networks at the keynotes. It was clear Apple knew that this was an important market. Others do, too. It's a giant market. It's relatively untapped. And one way to respond to saturation in the West is to say, well, we got a brand new market here with more than a billion customers. And it's proven true. Not so much for PCs, a little less for Android, but absolutely for iOS and Mac. revenue, just phenomenal. If you look at the pie chart, this is again from Mac Rumors.
That's Pac-Man.
What do you think the red thing is?
Money.
iPhone sales, that's the red one. Mac sales, the next biggest, that's blue, 10%. So iPhone sales, 69% of revenue. Mac sales, nice, 10% of revenue. I'm happy with that. Services, 9%. iPad sales, 9%.
It was that line from Tim Cook where he said, we're still generating money in excess of our ability to spend it. Which was,
did he say that?
It was something close to that. I forget the exact
word. That's a nice feeling, isn't it?
More money than they needed to operate the business.
Isn't that a good feeling? Those cash reserves going up, up, up.
Meanwhile, and they have this beautiful new money bin.
Caltech has developed a nanotechnology for creating a violin small enough to play the song to make people feel sorry for Tim Cook and his money.
Did he say anything about the watch? Did they give numbers?
It's too early because it went on pre-order at the end of the quarter. And they also said they're not going to break it out for the foreseeable future. So the analyst tried almost every sleight of tongue that they could to pry numbers out of him.
But right. Tim said, I'm thrilled with it.
And he did say that because they were asking why the margins were so low, given everyone assumes that margins on the Apple Watch are going to be stratospheric, but they were actually projected to be quite low.
Really?
And Tim said that those reports you see, I'm guessing he means iSupply on the internet, very seldom get anything close to accurate numbers about what it costs to make Apple products.
Yeah, he even gave some pretty conservative guidance about that, and he got questioned about that a few times on the call. Why is this margin number so low? Didn't really respond to it.
No. I think
they don't use off-the-shelf parts. Like iSupply excels when you're using off-the-shelf parts, right. But if you look at the watch teardowns, a lot of the stuff isn't very accurate, not because they're making a mistake in matching it, but because Apple's doing custom work. They're doing custom chips, custom glass. They're building machines that no one else has built before to make it, and all of that sort of adds up.
A lot of upgrades. 20% of the active base is upgraded to iPhone 6 or 6 Plus. I'm sure the watch will push that as well, because if you use anything less than an iPhone 5, older than an iPhone 5, you've got to upgrade to use the watch. Anything else to say about the results? Very successful. Another every quarter. It's a record quarter. Another great quarter. Well done. Profitable. Yep. Selling like crazy. And even the iPad, which is down 23%, still sold 1 million units a week.
Yeah. I mean, it's the problem with the iPhone is that it humiliates every other product, including Apple's own products.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to see, oh, look at that poor little iPad line. They only sold more than pretty much any other individual model of tablet out there. But I think if there's something to look at, it's largely that. It's a little bit of a zero sum game that if someone does not have money to buy a new iPad, it's probably because they're putting it someplace else. And it's interesting to start to speculate as to where people are moving instead of moving back into tablets, or if it's just that all the people that had a place in their heart and their lives for tablets have already bought them, and Apple and others have yet to come up with a good reason to buy a new tablet that will read Kindle books and watch videos better than the one they've had for the past 2.5 years.
In the chat room, somebody's saying admittedly, last quarter for Apple was the best quarterly results of any company in history. Right. This quarter, they were sixth. The sixth highest quarterly profit of any public company in history.
Ever. But they still have number one.
Yeah, they got number one. And I bet you they have 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. I'm guessing.
Nothing like making oligarchs in the oil industry cry.
It is. It's just remarkable to watch.
Are there shareholders saying, have you considered going into arms trading? There's a lot of money in that.
Yeah.
And you're being eclipsed by arms dealers now.
It is just remarkable. And, of course, one of the ways you keep this growth up is by coming up with new stuff. Not every product's going to be an iPhone. That is unique in history, really, the success of the iPhone. I don't think you can compare it to anything else. Maybe when they invented fire, the adoption rate was higher. I don't know.
Maybe some non-legal businesses. You could,
I think it sells better than Coke, honestly. And it's probably got a higher profit margin. All right. Adam Christensen is here from MacCast. It's great to see you, Adam. Did you get an Apple Watch?
I did. Got one.
Okay, let's see what you got. You got the Sport with the blue band.
I got the 38-millimeter blue. I got the bottom of the line.
Cheapest thing you could go for. You know, it's funny.
Which isn't cheap.
DisplayMate results are in for the screen. They say you got the better screen. Better even than Beyonce.
Well, it looks nice. I'll tell you that.
Renee, are you sporting the watch?
Yeah, I have a loaner because mine's not going to arrive till mid-May.
Milanese Loop 42?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I got stainless 38 Milanese Loop. Andy, let's see. Wait a minute. You don't have an iWatch.
I do not. I have my mundane Swiss Railway watch.
All right.
Design, and elegance.
Do you feel qualified to have an opinion, or are you going to recuse yourself in this next segment?
I'm going to recuse myself because I still have not read any reviews because I want to be
smart.
I want to be clean when I actually get my review hardware.
Well, we'll put you in the soundproof booth because coming up next are reviews of the Apple Watch. Stand by for reviews. But first, a word from our friends at IT Pro TV. First of all, I want to thank IT Pro TV because sight unseen, they have agreed to sponsor the new Screensaver show, which launches on Saturday. That's nice when a sponsor says, we believe in you guys. We know what you're doing is going to be great, and we would like to buy ads on it. It's hard for us with new shows sometimes to sell ads. But IT Pro TV, we kind of grew up together. When they started on Twitter about a year and a half ago, they were brand new in this business. Now, Tim and Don are not brand new in the business of teaching IT. That's their business and has been for more than a decade. But they had this kind of epiphany a couple of years ago. What if, they thought, we built something kind of like what Leo's done at Twit, did live programming that you could watch on your tablet, on your desktop, on your Roku even, that would teach you the skills you need to get your certs in IT or to, you know, to polish up your skills to get a better job, to, you know, get a promotion. What if we did that? And that's when they started about a year and a half ago. They've been advertising with us ever since. And you know what? They are, I hate to say it, but they're doing better than we are. They have built a second studio. They're on their way to 5 studios. They now do 50 hours of new programming every week, 50 live hours. They do stuff I've wanted to do. Like you can get a text message when the live streaming starts up. Gosh darn them. And it's really affordable, I have to say. $57 a month, $570 if you buy a year at a time. That works out to $47.50 a month. But stay tuned because I'm going to tell you a couple of things. First of all, how you could save considerably, but also about the free version of IT Pro TV. Take a look, itpro.tv/MacBreak. They do all the most popular certs, the Apple, Microsoft, Cisco, A+, CCNA, Security Plus, MCSA, CISSP, Network Security, on and on. They did and we talked about it, they got Sean Philip Oriano, and he's the guy who wrote the book on the certified ethical hacker cert. And he did it live, and you could watch for free the ethical hacker courses. They're now available for download and watching. And boy, I tell you, we know this is an area where people are going to be hiring big time. And in fact, didn't we have Mark Goodman on, Future Crimes author, who said there will be 1 million IT security jobs in the next few years? 1 million. So this is a skill worth its weight in gold. They gave it away for free, by the way. You can also get for free the Measure Up Practice Exams, a $79 value. So if you wish, you can take the test before you take the test, which I think is a great idea. You don't have to even have, if you're studying Windows, for instance, you don't even have to have the Windows Server. This is the coolest thing, a virtual Windows Server sandbox that runs in any HTML5 browser. So you could set up a Windows Server, a couple of clients, break it, which I always do, then you just quietly quit and come back later. It's so cool. Because they're live, you can interact with a host via chat, just like our shows, during the live show. Web-based Q&As for study topics. Even if you already are in a course or you're using a book, this is a great way to learn. Corporate and group pricing is available. Harvard uses IT Pro TV. MIT does. Stanford does. Okay? Okay? I mean, I tell you, these guys are knocking it out of the park. All right, here's the deal. A couple of things. First of all, you can create a free account and watch live for free. And that might be something you want to do because it just started yesterday, but you can still tune in from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern for the next 3 weeks, Hacking Forensics Investigator and Cryptography. Oh, that's sweet. That is so sweet. And if you decide you want to buy, and I think you might after you watch a little bit of this, because it's great to have. If you buy a year, by the way, you can download everything, put it on an iPad, and take it on the plane or wherever. You can watch it anytime. Again, I said $57 a month, didn't I? Well, take 30% off with the offer code MacBreak30.
That brings it down to $40 a month, $399 for a whole year. That's the best deal. Incredible. ITPro.tv/MacBreak. If you're ready to improve your skills, if you're ready to get a job in IT, I know a lot of you watch and say, I want to do this for a living. This is the place, ITPro.tv/MacBreak. Don't forget the offer code MacBreak30 for 30% off. And by the way, that's not just the first month or year. That's forever. That's for the life of your account. Thank you, ITPro TV. And now I'm jealous. Darn you, ITPro. They're doing five studios they're going to build. Five things at once. All right, we're three out of four wearing the watch. The fourth is sitting in a soundproof booth, so he won't be tainted by our opinions.
I just got a new Deanna Domrau CD came in just today.
Oh.
I will be listening to it during the conversation.
I'll say something right up front. It is easily the best. Now, I've worn all the smartwatches, including the weird Galaxy Gears and the, you know, all the different watches. And, of course, I'm a fan of Android Wear and have been wearing quite a bit. I'll say something right up front. I mean, in terms of looks, it's great. So I've asked a number of people. Some people say, yeah, it still looks kind of geeky. But yeah. I think it looks great. I like the Milanese loop, but there are lots of different kinds of bands. And the other thing, and DisplayMate confirmed this today, but I've been thinking this all along. It is a great display. This is Apple's first OLED display. All the Android Wear watches are LCD, I believe, IPS LCD. There are some Samsung OLED displays. I think many of the Samsung watches use OLED, but OLED has some real advantages. First of all, incredible contrast. The blacks are inky black. The whites are white, white, white. And that also saves power because only the lighter dots need to be powered. You don't need a backlight for the whole thing as you do on LCD. You could just light the part of the screen that's being used. But it also gives you an incredible looking high-res display. It's over 300 dots per inch. I did not know that, but they broke out the calipers at DisplayMate. And even the 38mm is over 300 dots per inch, I think, or close to, no, maybe 277. It's pretty good. So just from cosmetics, you know, just looking on the outside, not at the software, but just at the outside, I think it's a good-looking watch with a very nice-looking screen. Adam, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. I was really actually impressed. The Flora elastomer band.
You like the rubber band.
Well, how comfortable it is. Yeah. I wore a Pebble for the past, I think, over a year. And so, you know, I'm moving from the Pebble to this, and I've been very impressed just with the wearability of it.
Yeah.
I want to ultimately get a band. I just didn't want to pay the Apple tax on some of the bands. I'd like to
you
have
a leather.
You
think there'll be third-party bands? I guess it's a standard.
I think there's going to be a ton. And yeah. There were some rumors that Apple was going to have a certification program even, you know, so... I'm looking forward. I want to get something probably in leather. It'd be nice to have a couple different options, but you know, my budget doesn't allow for a $150 classic buckle band.
Those are beautiful though, aren't they?
They're very, yeah. All the bands are very nice. Like I said, yeah. This, you know, it is technically, I guess, rubber, but whatever the material is, doesn't feel like any other rubber strap that I've ever worn on a sport watch or a Swatch. I mean, it's really soft and supple and very, very comfortable to
wear.
Why'd
you get the 38?
I was going for the 42. And
that's why I'm wearing the 38 too.
in my house,
my wife's.
we do some pass down,
yeah.
You know, of technology.
Yeah.
So my wife didn't want one day one, but when I asked her sort of last minute, do you think you'd ever want it? And then we started talking about some of the features. She said, you know, I may. So I went with the 38 because she really didn't have any interest in the 42. And I know I'll be upgrading, you know, whenever the next one comes out.
Same with me. Same with me.
Up to the 42 then.
And I want to be able to send Lisa my heartbeat and all that stuff. Right?
You know, that's another one of those features that, you know, I thought right out of the gate, oh, come on, you know, this is not going to be a thing. But, you know, it's actually kind of an interesting.
Have you been able to send touches and heartbeats to people yet?
Yeah, my brother.
Yeah, isn't that sweet?
I mean, I like him a lot, but
I'm sending them to a stranger. The only other person I know with an Apple Watch is some guy that we've emailed. I don't even know who it was at first. See, I'm sending a heartbeat right now.
It's a brilliant plan to breed the next generation of Apple fans who will buy anything, because the only one you can send your heartbeat of love to are other people who bought an Apple Watch at 30 seconds past midnight.
That's exactly right. In fact, Lisa, I can't send her one yet. She's letting me wear her watch. She doesn't have one yet until I get mine, which is in a couple of weeks. So I'm sending heartbeats to strangers,
drawing little pictures. Look, he's drawing me a picture now.
Real quickly, I'm curious, Leo, on the size. You know, I've been wearing that Pebble, which I think is about 50 millimeters. I mean, it's pretty big.
Yeah, same thing with the Android Wear is much bigger.
Yeah, and when I went to do my try on, you know, I got to try on both, and I was pretty worried and disappointed because I was like, oh, I think I really wanted the 42. But I think a lot of that, too, was just having the two sort of side by side and having the comparison. Because now after wearing this, I mean, it feels fine. I think I still want the slightly larger just for me. But it doesn't feel like a compromise, I guess, is what I was worried it was going to feel like I had really compromised on the screen. And I'm not feeling that way after having worn it for a few days now.
Can I make one point that I actually had to take a picture of when I bought this watch like 5 or 6 years ago, I was waffling on this a lot because it is larger than any other watch I've ever bought. I used to have like a Timex that was probably 38 or a little bit smaller than that. And so this seemed like it was going to be an enormous watch. But after about 2 or 3 days of wearing it, I realized that it wasn't a big watch. It was just bigger than what I was used to. So if you're people who are trying to decide between 38 and 42 and they think that, gee, I think the 42 is going to be a lot more readable, but I'm kind of thrown off by how big it is, consider the size of the watch you're wearing right now or the fact that you don't wear a watch, and that might help you to decide.
I want to thank Stephen Hall, who's been sending me heartbeats and drawings and stuff so I could demo.
So Leo, of all the things that people have been sketching to you, how many of them are non-broadcastable? Do people just do pictures of kitty cats?
It's not that big. You really can't draw any genitalia.
Oh, yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
So many genitalias.
Okay.
$5 donation to the World Wildlife Fund every time somebody...
Okay, I'm going to give you all a chance to yell at me now because I'm going to tell you what I think about the guts, the insides. I mean, it's beautiful, and I'll acknowledge that. It's a great screen. Having worn, and I'm curious what you guys have to say, having worn smartwatches now for more than a year, I'm a little disappointed. This doesn't seem groundbreaking. In fact, in some ways, like the heartbeat in the drawings, that is not a selling point, frankly, for me.
No.
I think it's a little busier than it ought to be. There's a lot of, you know, manipulation and fiddling to get it to do things. And I just feel like it's not a breakthrough in the sense that it's in a particular regard better than Android Wear or the watches that have been out there. I think the screen is better than the Android Wear screens. It's nice to be able to take and make phone calls, but it's not something probably I will do a lot of. I don't find it particularly impressive. It's not bad. If you want a smartwatch, it's a good choice among all the smartwatches, but I think most people will not find this of great utility. And I think a lot of people just, I mean, don't feel bad, in other words, I guess is what I'm saying, if you didn't get one or you don't want one or you can't afford one, because I don't feel you're missing a lot of functionality. Agreed? Disagreed? Go ahead, Adam, fight me. Beat me up on this.
I think it has a lot more functionality than my Pebble did. I have not worn an Android Wear, so I can't really compare to that sort of thing. Let me say this.
No watch that works with Apple is going to do as well as this because Apple just locks everything down. And so only Apple really has access to all the features of the phone. Android Wear with Android, I think, gives you as much functionality, almost as much, in some cases not. You can't send a heartbeat.
Yeah. And I think some of it, too, though, is early stage and functionality. I definitely feel like there's some bugs. There's some things that Apple will be able to tweak, maybe in the software, in the UI. I'm not super happy with
how I have to navigate through glances. This is insane. Come on.
You have way more apps installed. I think that's another thing is I think paring down the number of apps that you're interacting with to really those ones that are essential, that really helps a lot. So I think some of it is tailoring the watch to what you need it to do.
Right. I've certainly done that with really glances important. Because you can have so many glances. That the problem with glances is they're individual pages, and you have to find what you're. There's no quick way to go to a glance that you want. You have to swipe through them.
Yeah, I hope they can tweak that. I mean, you can go into the settings and you can move them or you sort of change the order around and prioritize them. So maybe the ones you access most frequently are closer to one end or the other end. But yeah, I found that a little bit tricky to navigate. But I mean, these are things that can really be overcome as far as like the day-to-day utility and functionality of it. I'm finding, you know, as days go on, it's it's slowly integrating its way into more and more parts of my day. So, okay.
I think for somebody who works out, there's some real advantages to it. Let me see if I can manage to navigate to the workout
program. I was going to say that the workout stuff for me has been, I was using the Misfit app on my Pebble, which
this
was
is
great.
Really nice.
Yeah, but again, this is a lot nicer and tracking those. I'm not so sure about the awards that they give out. I haven't quite figured those out yet.
Yeah, they're little weird little 3D
images. Are strange. Yeah. The first one I got was looked like a target, but there was no words. There was no congratulations. It was just like this spinning, I guess, metal. I don't
know. Yeah, it's a
a little funky. But
so here's an outdoor cycle. Oh, somebody's tapping me. Okay, this is another issue. Also, do you find it slow to launch things? Like, I spend a lot of time watching.
That's the other thing. They still need to tweak the software a little bit. I've had some hangups and crashes, most specifically with some of the Siri functionality, where it'll just sort of go dead for, several seconds.
I actually had to reset the watch because it was stopped doing my heart rate for three days.
Yeah, but again, this is all early stage stuff. Version one, it's really, really good. I mean, I don't want to focus too much on the negatives because I'm pretty positive about it so far. Yeah, I know.
Well, and the main reason is I think that I want to make sure people don't feel any FOMO or need to rush out and get one.
Yeah, and the thing that I've been saying is that I don't think it's going to take us all about a month or month and a half to really come up with long-standing opinions on Apple Watch because developers have not figured out how to write apps for it yet. And so now that they see it in the flesh, they know how to adapt their apps to make it more relevant. Most of the people who are buying this have never worn a smartwatch before, so they're not used to how to integrate that into your lives. Right. There are a lot of things that really – so a lot of first impressions are – going to be valid as first impressions, but maybe if you circle back to those people in a month and ask them the same questions again, they'll have very different answers. I think that estimation of Apple Watch is probably going to go up a little bit as people, as users and developers figure this out.
I agree with you. There's a lot of, but all we're really saying is there's a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that I predicted, and I think I'm being demonstrated as being correct, that this is an early believer device right now. And that's not meant as an insult. There are people who wanted to be the first people to have electric cars because they knew that the first generation was not going to be as good as the second or third generation, but they believe in and support this product, this idea so wholeheartedly that they're eager to be one of these first people to kind of figure out how well these things work. And so people who are really excited about a wearable are going to be very, very happy about it, despite any failings that they might see in it. People who are buying it because they feel as though this is a simple consumer transaction for $350, I'm going to get a finalized, finished, polished product that's or completely as good as it's ever going to be, they might be disappointed. And I don't want people to be tainted by the reactions of those folks.
Andy's point about developers is really good, too, because that was something I wanted to mention also. I mean, on the software side of things, developers have had to throw out apps and build stuff really sight unseen. And some of the apps are really, really great. Some of them, you just go, this really needs to be rethought and redone. But they didn't have anything to go off of. So I don't necessarily fault them for that. You know, it's going to take some time to figure out, what's appropriate, what works well, what doesn't work well in this new kind of device for them. So, that's another thing that's only going to get better over time, I think. Out of the gate, they've done a great job. Long term, I think it's going to get even better.
All right, Renee, you've been nice and quiet.
Yeah.
He's gone!
Whoa.
Did he fall over?
No, sorry. He had to step away real quick. He had a call that just came in.
Okay, we'll get Renee. I thought Renee was very quiet.
What was going on.
This is the level of tension that everybody who ordered it in the first 5 minutes has. Any knock on the door could be a UPS person with an early delivery. They will not let that person walk away.
Some watches have been delivered early, by the way. Callie Lewis, a.k.a. Luria Patricia, was on yesterday on Triangulation. Great show if you want to watch that if you're a fan. And she did not expect hers for till June, and she got it. So some are coming early. But Apple has not said, and we did speculate last week, that if Apple had a marvelous, sell-through, that they would say something. They have in the past. We sold a million this weekend. They've said nothing. So we don't really know. We don't know how many have been delivered. There's been speculation that it's only maybe a third of the total ordered. We don't know. No one knows. You know, I'll tell you where my disappointment lies. And it's not really disappointment. It's not kind of anything I didn't expect. But, you know, me being an Apple fan, I know people doubt that, but it's true. I love Apple stuff. I bought everything ever. I own it all, including the 20th anniversary Macintosh, which is sitting over there unused. But as an Apple fan, I've seen Apple do this before. They did it with the iPod. They did it with the Apple, with the iPhone. They did it with the iPad, where they took an existing category and tweaked it in such a way that it made it work. It was like, oh, wow, they've sprinkled their fairy dust on it. And now I'm really into this category. And I was hopeful, but not, you know, not confident that they would do something similar. And to date, anyway, they haven't. I'll tell you the one thing they've done that is remarkable, and that is the double tap on the home or the friends button to launch Apple Pay. And they're right there with a double tap as my credit card. I can swipe through them, and I can tap it to the touch to pay. In fact, I'm going to use it to, after the show, because apparently yesterday our Petaluma Market just added this Apple Pay capability. So I am really thinking that might be a killer app where you just go, yeah, I got it.
Well, it's certainly going to convince people who have not signed up for Apple Pay to sign up for it, because I'm sure that they're accidentally triggering this. Because they're in by hour two, you're in. What happens if I triple press and then hold? Let's see what happens. But yeah, I mean, you had a really good point there that I think it was one of the an article in, was it Wired or the New Yorker, in which their Johnny Ive or one of the other head designers was talking about the difference between how Apple built this watch versus how they built the iPhone. They said that the iPhone was built, was designed based on everything that we hated about the phones that are in all of our pockets. And they built, the hate made them quite powerful and allowed them to build something that was quite spectacular. But then they said that's not their, that's my comment, not theirs. But then they said that with the watch, it was exactly the opposite. We built this watch based on everything that we love about the wristwatches that we wear all the time, and we tried to translate that into a tech device. So to my mind, it's kind of interesting to see, are they best motivated by looking at something they hate and trying to fix it? Or are they best motivated by saying, here's everything that we really, really like. Now let's sort of translate that into our own aesthetic and our own ethos.
Somebody's saying, well, maybe in time, Proteus says, it's only in hindsight that we'll see the Apple got it right thing. I disagree. I think the iPhone, you immediately got what a breakthrough that was. The iPad, same thing. The iPod, the same thing. Now, it may be, I think one of the things that could make this a breakthrough product is the ecosystem. And Apple has mixed, I have to say, has mixed results. I'm still waiting for iBeacons to be everywhere. They have mixed results in getting making ecosystem plays. But if they could expand the ecosystem so that this watch becomes hideously useful at the airport, at the grocery store, at the, you know, at the gym, that could make a huge difference. And that's something that will only happen in time.
Well, that's developers, right? I mean, that's them getting to that point where hopefully at WWDC this year, we see the Apple Watch, you know, API to write native apps. And once that starts opening up, so, you know, we're at a starting point here and they're doing a lot of amazing things. But like I said earlier, the potential is only even, you know, bigger.
Yeah, it's going to be so hard because remember that as radical as the iPod was, as radical as the iPhone was, even as radical as the iPad was, we had had Discmans and portable music players, and we had had phones in our pockets at that point, and we had had even ebook readers and computers that we carry around with us. I don't think Apple has ever been in this position where you have never worn a smartwatch in your entire life. So we're going to have to start with convincing you of why you would want to wear a gadget on your wrist and why it would be specifically this gadget, why you would give up your grandfather's retirement watch, why you would give up this other or the bare wrist that you decided that you prefer to having a watch on your wrist and put this on your wrist instead. So this, I think all of that has to be factored in when we think about how successful Apple is going to be when the first time that we get real good numbers on how well it's selling after the first initial burst of excitement. It's not a failure if it's a slow build, because it's hard to overestimate the challenge that Apple faces in educating people about this product.
Now Renee Ritchie's back, by the way. Thank you, Renee.
You
missed the whole discussion.
Did you watch arrive? Good
mid-May.
Mid-May for my 42 as well. What do you think on the 38 versus 42? I mean, there is a significant difference, not just in size, but in screen resolution and in battery.
They're not, I mean, neither of these are tiny nor large watches. Like, a lot of people will consider a large watch around 46 millimeters and a small watch maybe 36, even 34 millimeters. So Apple's kind of gotten two options in the middle. And yes, there is battery life advantage and screen size and touch target advantage if you go bigger, but there's also a loss of profile. Like, some people like the smaller profile, the lighter profile if you're jogging, if you wear it underneath tight sleeves. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors, and I like that they're both sort of in the middle now, because you can... You can just choose. If it looks way too big on your wrist, you go a little bit smaller. If it looks a little bit too small, it becomes more of a matter of personal taste, unless you're at the extreme of, you know, giant Schwarzenegger or small elfin sort of wrists.
You didn't hear probably my take on this, which was, it's nice to wear something on your wrist that is designed by two of the best designers in the world, Johnny Ive and Mark.
Hardware is fantastic. The industrial design is fantastic. I think it's the best thing Apple's ever made, and that's saying a lot.
It is gorgeous. And, you know, pulling off the band is easy. I like the band choices. Some say it still looks geeky. I think it looks really nice. This is a watch I'm happy to wear. Having said that, I felt that it isn't a breakthrough in the way that Apple has made a breakthrough in other cases with the iPhone, iPad, and iPod. It's not significantly different than other smartwatches I've worn.
My feelings are complicated, and I think that's a good thing. So, like, when the iPhone came out, a lot of people really liked it, but I had a Trio, and I was like, no MMS, no apps. We're sort of more educated now. This is maybe analogous to the original iPhone, where it does some things very nice, but doesn't do everything, or some things it doesn't do as well, and maybe some other products do other things better, but is there a workflow, or is there something about it that makes it extremely valuable? I'd argue the original iPhone and iPad, that little, you know, photo zoom demo probably did as much to sell it as any of the core technologies, because it made for a great video, just watching Steve Jobs or watching your friends do it. And I've been using the watch for, I don't know, almost a week now. In some ways, it's way better than I thought it was going to be. And I thought it was going to be pretty good. I'd used the Pebble, I'd used Android Wear for a short amount of time. And the things that it let me do, and my core value for this was convenience. If it could just, the same way my iPhone lets me not have to go back to my Mac all the time, if my Apple Watch could let me not go back to my iPhone all the time, especially when I'm in cars or in planes and trying to pull it out or at a store, that to me would be a huge win. And I had the benefit of flying back with it on Sunday. And I woke up, TripIt had a notification on my watch saying my plane was on time. I went across to the coffee shop. I bought my coffee with my watch. I sat there. I kept track of the flight. I got up. I called an Uber. Instead of pulling my phone out of my pocket every 2 minutes, I just watched the Uber arrive on the watch, drove there, checked notifications. Most of the time, I can't tell who's texting me on my phone, and some of them are really important. So I pull it out no matter who it is. And on this, I could just look and see whether it was really something important, and my phone could stay in my pocket most of the time. And I got to the airport, and my boarding pass was on my Apple Watch, so I have bags I'm carrying. I don't have to hold the phone in one hand. I can just turn the Apple Watch. And they do this nice thing for Starbucks and for Air Canada and a lot of apps where when the barcode comes up, everything else fades to black, and it just makes the barcode as visible as proper as possible. So it's scanned super easily. And on the flight, I usually pull my iPhone out because I get impatient. And I check how long it is and when I'm landing. And this, again, I just turned my wrist and the information was right there. So on convenience alone, for me, it was a huge win. And yes, some of the apps aren't well considered. And if you try to use it like an iPhone and tap around, it's hard to find apps. I just say, hey, Siri, TripIt, hey Siri, Uber. Sorry for everyone whose phones. And
by the way, it is the way to launch stuff. We were talking about that crazy grid, and it was a revelation. Megan Maroney yesterday, iPad Today, said, "Can't you just ask Siri to launch stuff?" And when you do that, that works well. Have you experienced that Siri actually works better on the watch than it does on the phone? It seems to be.
There's several reasons why that is. There was a presentation that Apple did a couple days ago that you can find on the web about the new architectures that they're using. But there's a lot of really good new Siri technology. See, Leo, if you add me on your watch, I'll send you Batman head.
That would be cool. I will add you on my watch. I actually tried to, and I don't have your phone number, so
I DM'd it to you.
Thank you.
I've been sending the sketches. I have a lot of friends with Apple. So some people were saying, I want more friends because my sister and my mom got it. All my coworkers at iMore got it. My two best friends got it. I have a couple other media pals who have them.
That will make a difference when others have it, right?
Yeah, and we send sketches. I mean, Ali Kazmuha, one of our editors, is playing tic-tac-toe, and it's not just a challenge game. It's a memory game because you got to remember every move every time.
It doesn't preserve it.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. Some of the stuff, like some of the bad stuff is, again, like some of the fitness stuff. It tells me to stand when I'm already standing. I'm not sure how to adjust for, and Ali's finding this too, how to adjust for resistance when you're doing some of the training. And there are rough edges, but there's nothing like putting your product on a million people's wrists and getting a lot of feedback. And same the iPhone from 2007 or the iPad from 2010 to today, they weren't really revolutionary. We kind of look back in hindsight. I think that's something you can only judge with time and space.
But they were revolutionary at the time. I mean, multi-touch on a smartphone with a big screen, which was the first iPhone, was you would look at it and you'd go, yes, they got it.
Well, some people. Brilliant. People like, oh, it's just a big iPad, or oh, it's just my Trio or my BlackBerry does more than that. Yeah, it's a toy.
I never felt that way. But I guess the real question is, does this jumpstart the smartwatch category?
I mean, however many millions in sales and 3,500 apps, it's going to do a lot to put in people who didn't really even think about it before. And I think Andy said this before, I think it really benefits Android Wear and Pebble and everybody too, because the awareness is so high. I like the choices Apple made. Like Apple is brand new to OLED, and iOS 7 is a white interface, and they went dark. Material Design is a white interface. They stayed white, and I'm hoping they go dark too, because I think there's a lot of things that we're going to have to do in the beginning to really maximize the potential of Wrist software. And I feel like with both Apple and Google working on it, we'll get to that solution faster for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree, because what people don't understand is that just if all a smartwatch does is take notifications off of your phone and put them on your wrist, that in itself is a huge chunk of the win of having a smartwatch. And there's not a whole lot that Apple Watch does in terms of the software, in terms of things it puts on the screen, that Android Wear doesn't do. And there's even the new version of Pebble isn't quite as ambitious as even Android Wear, but it's still a lot of that functionality. So it's very, very possible for someone to have a friend who has an Apple Watch and see how well that works. But then, hey, I'm unfortunately, either A, I don't have $400 to spend on a watch, or I don't have an iPhone. They could then take a look at an Android Wear watch or look at a Pebble and realize they're going to get much, if not most, of that on whatever device they use. So this really, they are doing wonderful education and PR for anybody who wants to create a wearable device.
Tips for people who haven't got theirs yet but are about to. I know you on iMore, you've done a great bunch of articles, including things like, how does the heart rate sensor work on a tattooed forearm?
That was Serenity this morning. Luckily, she had access. She had high availability tattoos to do a lot of testing on.
But she tested on her roller derby team.
Well, I mean, it's a thing. We saw it coming up on Twitter and Reddit today, where people who had tattoos, because Apple's using both a green LED and an infrared sensor to measure heart rate. And the infrared is the passive one. The green LED is the active one. And it'll switch depending on how much trouble it has. But if you have a tattoo on that exact spot, and especially if it's really dark, or it's really or it's a color that readily absorbs that light, then you're going to get inaccurate readings. And you have to either change your wrist, or maybe heart rate's not that important to you. But we try to give people a lot of information if we can.
Yeah. I'm going to add you to, let me ask you this, because some of my, like Lisa is not showing up as an iPhone user. How do you make sure that you are going to be able to, if your friend has an Apple Watch, send them heartbeats and drawings?
It's the iMessage system. So if you have, in your contacts, if you have her iMessage activated, phone number or iCloud address or whatever address she uses for iCloud in there, then it should just work.
Okay, so I've just added Renee Ritchie by phone number, but I also had your email address, so that should be sufficient, right?
Yes. Okay. And I will send you. I'm working on Darth Vader heads; they're not as good as the Batman.
Well, let me just see. I've made you a friend because you have a lot of room for friends. It adds your favorites right away, but then you have room to add a few more. So I have a few more positions. So yes, I could see I could send you something. So I'm just going to send you that. Quick, which is a poor tip. Batman.
The Finder icon.
Huh? The Finder. That's what I did. I sent you the Finder icon.
Quick tip on the drawing thing, because this wasn't readily apparent to me at first. You don't have to rush. Like, I felt I'm going to draw something and it's going to start sending before I even finish it.
Right.
It has a pretty good sense of when you've stopped interacting with the screen. So you can take a little time and spend a little time on your drawing. You don't have to rush it through, or if you need to go over a line to make it thicker, something like that. So that was a little
helpful. Take your time.
Okay. If you make a mistake, tap the color picker because that'll stop the picture from sending.
That's kind of a cool thing, too. You can change the color that you send.
Yeah.
It's, you can't do multiple colors yet, though, unfortunately, right?
It just occurred to me that another reason why I would very much like to be Susan Kare's friend is that I bet she does the most
she'd be
awesome
very good at this.
Apple Watch sketches.
Now, I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm a lefty, so everything I draw, I'm drawing with my right hand, which means you're getting terrible drawings from me. Now I realize, I know now why I don't find any usefulness for this. Now, you can wear this on your right wrist. You have to flip it upside down, but there's a setting to say which wrist you're going to watch it. Use it on.
You can reorient the screen. I think I work with Jeff Gambit over the Mac Observer, and when he went in for his fitting, they pointed out, you probably want the digital crown pointed out towards your wrist, because his first thing when he tried it on was to flip it around, which meant the digital crown was on the, you had to reach across the face of the watch.
Right.
Well, and you don't want to reach across the face of the watch and obscure it when you're using the digital crown. So they thought of these things, which is nice.
Thank you, Renee, for the Batman sketch. Well, and I apologize for the very poor sketches. So what you're saying is the best way to do this would be put it, because I can't draw with my right hand, so I should wear it on my right wrist. And you're saying just leave it the way, like, don't reorient it?
Put the digital crown toward your wrist.
You should.
So you're not reaching it toward your fingers, right? The digital crown should be pointing toward your fingers.
So turn it around, in other words.
Yeah,
got
it.
This is just moving the wrist over. But I can also, if I wish, tell it I'm wearing it on my right wrist, which would mean then I could flip it upside
down. And it will flip the screen around so that it's oriented.
So you think that's how I should do it?
You can independently set orientation and the side that the digital crown is on. It's got settings for both.
Oh, that's independent.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's totally preference, Leo. But the point was, if you put the digital crown toward your sleeve, when you take your hand, you're going to be reaching to operate the digital crown. You're going to be reaching
across it.
Now, the only weird thing about that way is the digital crown's on the bottom and the buttons on the top. So it becomes preference, really, at that point.
And then people have asked, can I wear it? And I think you can, as some people do, on the inside of the wrist. That works fine, too. Yes?
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to try it. Now I realize I was just going to wear it like normal people do on my left arm, but I realize now that will impede my drawing ability. So I'm and this is another thing. You now have a reason for this crap icon on iOS 8, which is that a lot of what you do needs to be done on the phone.
Yeah. Another tip that I'll comment on that wasn't obvious to me at first, you mentioned Apple Pay earlier, which I absolutely love. I've done Apple Pay on my watch. I used it day one at a Walgreens, and it went really quick. It worked really, really well. The UI for that's a little bit confusing, because when you first go in to look at Passbook and Apple Pay, at the top it says mirror my phone.
Right.
And I thought that meant like all my cards were
phone
were going to be in there, right? You still have to add them from the watch interface.
That was kind of a pain in the butt. So, all the cards have to be added.
Re-added.
What's weird is you're still adding them on the phone.
Right.
But somebody said, it's because the secure store on the iPhone can't communicate with the secure store on the
app. Which makes sense.
On the watch, you need to have a separate secure store. Yet, I'm still entering the cards on this phone and sending them to the watch. So I'm confused. But that is something you should be aware of. If you're going to use Apple Pay, you need to completely set it up anew with all the cards on your watch separately. And that is nice to know that they have the same lock rules on the watch. At first I thought, I'm not going to lock the watch. And they said, dude, if you don't lock the watch, you can't use Apple Pay because you'll be letting your credit cards go. So they make you lock the watch. It unlocks. You have various settings, but it will unlock when you use Touch ID on your phone. Then you don't have to worry about entering a 4-digit code on the watch, which is not.
Or if you're Steve Gibson, you have a massive password that's unique just to your Apple Watch.
And there also is the erase watch if somebody gets it wrong 10 times feature, which I think that's a good thing to do too.
Yeah.
This is pretty impressive. So you can put it on left wrist, right wrist, digital crown on left side, digital crown on right side. So it really is. I mean, kudos to them on that.
I'll tell you one thing that is I really didn't like, and I don't know if either of you have tried this, sort of reorganizing your app icons on the app screen. I do not get what that game is all about.
Oh.
Some people are really into that. Like one of my coworkers, Allie, she has all of hers in a very thin vertical line. So all she has to do is scroll up and down with the crown.
Oh, that's a good idea. Right.
But getting it to
that must have taken her a day to do that.
Yeah, because they move around weird. If you get one next to another one, it pushes it down to, you know, it's like this
There's
game.
There's a thread on Reddit with these great patterns, like ninja star patterns and all sorts of amazing things.
So you mean I could.
Yeah, I arranged mine by color. So I have bands of color. For my icons.
That's a nice idea. Put all the green ones together.
But doing it was like impossible.
Yeah, because this just popped up.
Hours. Yeah, it's like a new game. One in line, you got to kind of put it at the end of the line. It seemed to work best for me, but I don't know. It's it's not easy.
This is a game. We'll just make a game out of it. Now, the other thing that happens now.
I love how this watch is simplifying your life and giving you more free to enjoy the world around you.
Look, isn't that a great interface? So we were skeptical about this interface the moment we saw it. When they first showed it, I thought, is that really how I'm going to be? But fortunately, Siri does work unless you're in a very noisy environment and you can say, hey, what's your name?
Yeah, see, there you go. The green one keeps popping up on you, right? See,
yeah, but that's a fun game. It's something to do in your spare time.
It's also, I mean, this is also a safety valve. You're really meant to react to notifications and to use Siri to launch applications.
Right.
But there are going to be some people who want to use it like an iPhone, the way some people use Terminal and OS X or use an iPhone like a Mac.
That's crazy.
Yeah, don't.
Don't.
You drive yourself nuts.
Yes.
Although I like this idea of color bars.
I told it not to install apps on my Apple Watch.
Okay,
and
now,
on a case-by-case basis.
That's what I want to talk about.
Really important.
So when you first set it up, it automatically takes every app that's on your phone, and if it has an Apple Watch, it does ask you.
Yeah.
Yes. Say no.
So it will, if you say yes, which I said, immediately install every app that's on your phone that has a watch interface on the watch. That's not what you want. You want a one by one.
It's important to remember, these aren't really apps. These are WatchKit extensions.
Right.
So you can think of them almost like web apps. When you launch them at first, they'll take a while. Then they'll cache to the device, and they'll be faster if you use them frequently.
They can be very slow the first time you launch them.
Yeah, but you really want to pare down. You really want to figure out, what do I want to know about on here? And the same goes with notifications. So you got to figure out your notifications, your glances. And, you know, I would say best advice is start with as few as you think you need, and then
add them. And how do you add them? So they all
just
show up here, right?
Yep. They're just in a long list.
So you could decide. So for instance, I didn't want to use Twitter because my friend Renee Ritchie said Twitterific was so much better on the watch.
It makes more sense to me because Twitter shows a timeline. They show what they want you to see,
right?
But Twitterific kind of shows me what I want to see.
But you have the choice. You can not only show it on the watch, and that's that grid, but you could decide whether you want to see it in glances. And in many cases, I don't think you want it in glances because glances can get unusable.
I haven't used it. I use glances for the settings app, the heartbeat, like things that are
pare down your glances because otherwise
that I don't want to interact with.
I do like this. So I have the Audible app running on the phone. I was listening to my book. Where's my button?
Yeah, see, I messed you up now because I made you flip it over. It's on the top. That's why I said you have to decide what you like.
I'm going to get used to this.
On the bottom and the button on the top, or the other way around.
As a lefty, I've always worn my watches as normal people do on my left wrist, even because you want to wind it and stuff. But now I realize for drawing, that's untenable. So I think I'm going to have to get used to wearing a watch on my right wrist. But this is nice. So it controls whatever audio was playing back on your phone.
Yep, podcasts, audiobooks, music, everything.
And that's great. So it didn't need an Audible app for me to be able to control my Audible. And if I press play, it comes on the phone. Now, you can also have it, in some cases, play back on the watch, right? Do you have to decide which? No, Audible does not because it doesn't have an app.
You can sync up to 2 gigabytes of your
music
library.
But music,
you can
play back from
the
little TV speaker
there. And the way you do that is you pick a playlist. So you set up a playlist, and then you choose that as the one that you want to sync.
So you'd have a playlist in your
music app. Yeah, and I believe that you select it from the watch, from the music settings in the watch app. I believe. I haven't done it yet.
But. I haven't either. It has 6 gigs. It has a decent amount of storage.
So it's in the music app, in the watch app. You choose which playlist you'd like to sync.
Showing glances. That's good because that gives me the capability, not just with music, but whatever's playing, to control it on the watch. Synced playlist. So now I can say, let me play back my gym music. That's a logical thing, right? As if I had gym music. And then playlist limit. You can even set the limit of the amount of storage you want. It can't be any more than 2. Or you can say how many songs, up to 250.
And then you'll need Bluetooth headphones. you won't actually hear it.
Oh, it doesn't come out of the little speaker?
I don't know.
Not that that would be very good, but...
All right. I don't know. I don't think so.
You know, when you look at stuff like this, it's clear that they've been spending a lot of... This is a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of thought, and a lot of beta testing, because in many ways, this is very nice and elegant. And I do give them kudos for that.
One of the really cool things is when you first get it, if you want to take it out for running by itself, they suggest you use the iPhone with it for a couple of days because it'll match the GPS information to what the watch is modeling and showing it, and just make sure to adjust it for your stride, your activity level. And then the accuracy will be even better when you take the watch out by itself.
Clever.
Yeah.
This is good. We're getting some good tips for those of you who are waiting for your watch to arrive. Are you guys, we have four people in the studio audience, all getting watches? Yes, yes. Next year, smart, and never. We got two.
I'm wondering if next year we'll have a case only option, like for people who already have all the straps that they want or the bands that they want, they'll be able to just get the case. That'd be fun.
I did not scratch. Somebody's saying Leo scratched the screen. It looked like a scratch, but it was just a smudge. So as far as I can tell, the screen is not scratched. Now we have seen people break the sport watch screen. This is the steel and the edition have a sapphire. DisplayMate said some interesting things, though. You know, they test these displays. They said you're getting the best screen if you add them on your sport watch, because that screen is using the same kind of glass that they use on the iPhone, which is better looking, gives you richer blacks and so forth, and better in bright light as well than the sapphire. Sapphire reduces the screen.
I always thought the transparency of sapphire was
I thought so too.
Clear, right?
It's I have to say this is very legible. Look how cool. I mean, that's really easy to see.
We got
amazing display.
Yeah.
We got Greg Koenig from Luma Labs to do a whole thing on Apple's material design for us. And he was explaining, and I didn't know that there really are trade-offs in everything. Like sapphire is more scratch resistant,
right,
but it doesn't bend as much as the ion exchange glass does on the iPhone. So everyone who thinks like, you know, there's just one great answer to materials, then everyone would just be using those materials. They really are trade-offs.
There's no perfect. Yeah.
Well, and he was amazed at how...
Saves you money, I presume, making it with glass, not a...
He was amazed at how well the aluminum had held up. He thought that it would be bad. Like, he went to a lot of Apple retail stores and checked, and he was amazed at how well, after 10 days of try-ons, the aluminum casing had held up.
Some people are saying they're getting scratches in their stainless steel. Yeah, that doesn't seem... Well,
it's like any stainless steel. I've had stainless steel watches before, and the bands will scratch, but any watchmaker or anyone who knows how to take
it out.
You know, okay. Yeah.
I have to say, I've never had a watch that didn't nick after a while, right? I mean, that's just what happens. So which face do you fellas like? I was just showing the really cool astronomy face. But the problem with something like this is you don't get as many complications, those little informational windows. So you can't see, for instance, but I do love this. This is just a show off display. Right?
Yeah.
There's the moon, and I can actually go see the dark side of the moon and verify that Adam Curry's wrong. There is no secret U.S. military base on the back there. And let's press this again. Is anybody using Mickey?
I do on weekends. I'm using Monitor.
On weekends.
That's my weekend watch face. MacBook Weekly is on X.
You use the ugly info. Face.
I use it for work because I'm actually working, it has so much information density, and then immediately when my day ends, I switch to like one of the cool butterfly or Mickey Mouse watch faces.
Yeah, is that the modular one?
Yes,
that's modular. The one I use as well.
Really,
it's just for the same reason. It's the most information sort of on one screen.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah,
well, I don't know if I'd say it's cool.
I like utility because
I did color match it to my band, which was nice.
That's nice.
You can see that.
Yeah. Utility is a good looking watch face that does give me a lot of information. Battery life. I'm using UTC. I have my calendar. You tap your calendar, you'll get it. And all of these are somewhat customizable in some degree.
I'm doing a different one every day just so I can try them all.
It's fun, you know. This is nice because you can take this utility and you can simplify the face, or you can complexify the face, depending on how many little, you know, how you feel. Given that they're not allowing custom faces, they've done a pretty nice job, I think.
And I predict WWDC or sometime soon that at some point there may be a watch face API that developers can start to.
Gruber makes a good case for this, that because of the OLED and battery life, you don't want to just kind of willy nilly random. And besides, Steve would hate it if somebody put an ugly face on this watch.
Yeah,
I want a Superman face so badly.
I was having some discussions with that with some people on Twitter a couple weeks ago, because on Android Wear, it actually took Google until October before they released the APIs for developers to create their own watch faces. And to me, that was one of the most brilliant things that happened to Android Wear, because not only was it developers creating new watch faces, but also developers creating Android apps that let users create their own watch faces. And you can do pretty much anything. And now there's a watch face repo or two where you can see every single user created watch face that somebody decided to share. One of my favorite ones is just, it says the time and underneath has a test. No, this isn't a bleeping Apple Watch. So this leads to some discussions about people saying, well, would Apple allow somebody to put an ugly face on the watch? And that's an interesting thing. I think the technical problems of creating a watch face kit are bigger than whatever aesthetic concerns they might have. But it's an interesting thing, because if you can imagine one company saying, no, we want approval on watch face design because we don't want, here's the crap emoji and flies buzzing around it to tell you what time it is. We don't want that on our watch. We put so much time and effort into this. But nonetheless, that's one of the things you do to a smartwatch that makes it really yours. It's the same thing with the Pebble watch. People just love their kitty cat watch face, or their Star Trek Elkar's watch face. It's something that takes this thing that millions of people have and makes it uniquely yours. And I think that's something that really creates intimacy and a connection to the product. So I can't wait for that to happen for Apple Watch.
Yeah, Apple likes that too.
Which one do you use, a jellyfish, flowers, or butterfly, Renee?
I like them all. Like I said, I'm trying to do a different one every day so I get a sense of it.
I wish you could have a completely random choice.
Andy's point, before March, there were two additional faces. There was Time Lapse, which had like photographs of Big Ben moving slowly through time.
Oh, that's neat.
And there was a custom photo one where you could pick any photo from the photo library. And those, they didn't hold up well. Lighting up that many pixels in OLED didn't give them the battery performance they preferred.
Yeah. Notice how much black there is. I mean, that's the key on OLED, is anything that's black, that's not lit up, is not using juice.
Yeah. Well, again, I mean, this could be a version 2. This could be when they figure it out. I think the ultimate deciding factor for Apple is going to be 30% of every watch face sale. What people can get faces, even if at $1 a piece, you're going to be downloading hundreds of them.
And you can't buy watch apps right now. You can only use, they're only extensions, so they come for free with the app.
What is your your experience with battery at this point? Mine gets through the day, no problem.
Roaming on AT&T was hard, but that's hard for my iPhone too. Once I got home, everything was really, really good.
Did it impact your iPhone battery life too?
It's hard to tell. So basically, it's using Bluetooth LE as much as it can. It'll only escalate to Wi-Fi if the amount of data is significant and it needs to race to sleep, or if there's some problem with Bluetooth. So it's going to use Bluetooth LE. Bluetooth LE is incredibly power efficient, but it's still a radio. So if you never had Bluetooth on and now suddenly you have it on and it's communicating, it's going to be using more power. How much you use your watch and how much you use apps and how much you use handoff. The Apple Watch can hand off Siri. It can hand off all sorts of things that even iPhones and things can't do. So it's going to be entirely up to your usage, but it should be analogous to any other Bluetooth device that you're using for the same amount of time.
Yeah. Mine's been good so far, except one day. And it was a day I did a 30-minute workout. And something odd happened. When I finished that workout, I went to take off the watch and the green LEDs were stuck on for some reason. Yeah. And I had to reboot the watch to sort of I even had to shut it down. I think reboot didn't even do it. So I don't know if something happened with the sensors there to kind of throw them off and they got stuck and that drained the battery extra. And then also I had one sort of app that was doing a lot of notifications. I was getting a lot of notifications. So I disabled that. And then since then it's been great. You know, I can get very much to the end of the day with, 30-40% battery life. Yeah. It seems like
that tracks, for instance, with my experience with the Moto 360. Hated it after the first day. I liked it after the first weekend. And after 2 weeks, after everything had been dialed in the way that I like it and I learned how to use it, that's when I started. Okay, this is good. I'm going to keep this.
Yeah, I had the same experience too. It took a little while to appreciate the value. This does, let's see. So battery life, acceptable. Charging fast. Charges in like an hour and a half fully from 0 to 60.
Just went and bought all the cables. They have the in Canada it's 1 meter and 2 meters. I'm guessing that's 3 and 6 feet in the US.
Yeah.
And you get the nice, I have it here, you get the nice steel version when you buy them at retail, the stainless
steel. By the way, those cables will charge your Moto 360, so that's another benefit.
Yeah.
Apparently Apple is using something that's compatible with Qi charging.
So it must be using Qi. Has anybody tried, I would suggest you try this, go on Amazon and buy one of those $10 little like Qi charging pads to see if it works.
I have not been able to do it in the other direction. I have tons of Qi chargers everywhere.
Okay. Doesn't work.
Well, it's tough because positioning, as you know, with Qi is tricky. You got to match the induction engine on the device to the inducer on the charger. That's the nice thing about the way they've done it with a watch because of the magnet. It just goes walk and it's perfect every time. I have yet to, even with moving this around, find a place that I can charge the watch. It does go in the other direction, though, so I'm not sure.
That's weird, because I have the I'd have it here, but I just came back from a trip, and so it's in my travel bag. I do have, like, a little silver dollar-sized pad that I travel with to charge the watch with, and it's easy to hit the target. Also, you can buy these pads that actually have three coils in them, so that no matter where you put it, it's probably going to be close to someplace.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to see if Apple has made this a Apple-only charging stand party, or because I really do like I've used smartwatches where there's some sort of a magnetic connector, and it's so nice. Fine. There's nothing bad about it, but there's something about I took my watch off, I simply dropped it on the nightstand, and that's all I had to do with it. That makes it kind of a little bit cooler.
This is pretty easy. You just go thwack. It's a very satisfying thwack. What else? Anything else we want to tell people before they get
the downside
watches?
With the inductive charges? With an iPhone, I have a Mophie power station. I can just plug it in, put it in my pocket, walk around. The inductive stuff never stays in one place long enough. So I stick it on, walk, put it in my pocket, walk around. Right. It inevitably gets dislodged, and I don't charge, and I become sad.
I bet someone's going to make an Altoids hack where it has an induction charger inside it, and plus there's like a shape of foam insert that keeps it held in the right place. You simply close it, plug it into your battery pack, and it will work. I should make that for the Moto 360. Andy, you're brilliant. I'm going to do that right now.
Somebody said somebody should get a 3D printer and make a holder for the thwack thing, and then you could thwack it into a like easel holder or something like that.
Nice.
Yep. I've already seen a whole bunch of people on Kickstarter, and even with their own, we've got here's the beautiful oiled walnut desk stand, or the beautiful nightstand holder that's going to let you use it as a timepiece while you're trying to fall asleep, but you're being distracted by notifications.
Steven is trying to draw something right on my wrist now. I don't know what the heck that is. Oh, you missed it. Let's how do you replay?
You can't. It's ephemeral, like Snapchat.
What?
Forever.
Yep.
Oh man. By the way, try Force Touch, because even in notifications, Force Touch has it's like kind of right-click. Always try, for instance, this clears all notifications.
That's a good tip as well. Yeah,
I want that on the iPhone.
Force Touch, yes, I do too. They still don't have a clear all, huh?
No.
Ugh, drives me crazy. This is nice too. The first glance gives you a chance to ping your iPhone if you lose it. It'll make little sounds on your iPhone. I like that. And of course you have controls for airplane, sleep, and mute.
The mute one's very important too, if you're going to go into a movie or something.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. What do you think of Taptic now that we've had some? To me, it's like, this is an example of how Apple has been so good at marketing, describing this. It's not just vibration. It's a Taptic. It's just vibration, kids.
As someone who gets embarrassed when his phone, like if I'm talking to somebody, especially somebody in a social situation, and my pocket is vibrating, I find it very embarrassing. So I don't care what they call it. As long as they make it so that I can feel it and nobody else can hear it, I'm really in favor of it.
Yeah. It's great on with the Maps app. When coupled with the Maps app, I've been doing some driving, and having the tap for upcoming left and right is pretty neat.
But it's not like, we should make this clear. I thought it was going to be like the left side of the watch would tap.
No.
It's like it's different patterns.
Yes. Yeah.
It's really just a vibration. Come on, admit it.
It's not noisy though. It's like, to me, again, it's not the vibration. It's the other people hear it or not.
You're right, but that's because it's not sitting on a table. It's resting on your cushy little arm.
Well, it won't tap if it's on a table.
All right.
To me, it has more of a thunk. What I call a thunk to it. You know, it's more like a.
There's an attack.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just quite like
a slightly percussive attack.
My Pebble buzzes, and it buzzes. Right. You know, in it's pretty jolting. This is much more subtle. Takes a little getting used to as well. You might at first, I noticed I would miss certain taps because it can be that subtle, but you sort of adapt to it. And I would say it's different than a Vibrate.
Okay.
For me, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a different sensation.
I've not had it muted, so I also get a piercing little yelp when it vibrates.
Turn that off 3 seconds. Yeah.
Turn the the sounds can get annoying if you
it's
don't
a little
need
them. Piercing. But you hear it. Mm-hmm. It works that
and
way.
Serenity also turned off the twist your wrist to turn on the screen because she found that from the theater she gestured a lot and she was getting a lot of false positives.
Yeah, a number of people complained this is not the ideal movie watch. The only way to dim it is to cover it with your hand and then it goes silent. And so apparently it will, at random moments, light up the movie theater.
If you put it in Do Not Disturb for movies, it's recommended.
That's what it's recommended.
Yeah. I bet that they're going to take a page from Android Wear because that was one of the first additions they made because they got the exact same complaint. Yep. And now there is, if you swipe down, you can basically put the
cut
in theater mode where it still works, but you have to actually push the clicky button to light up the screen.
Mm-hmm. So how does Serenity light up her screen? She pushes the button every time?
Yes. Well, she taps the screen.
Or taps it. I bet she gets better battery life that way, too.
Yes, that's another advantage. OLED is really good, but not lighting up a screen is always better than lighting up a screen.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah, it doesn't take that much extra effort to tap the screen, I've found. No. So I'm probably going to move to that as well, just for battery life.
It's more positive, too. And I had the same problem with Android Wear, where at first, and Annie, I think you were the one who told me, I was doing it really hard.
Yeah.
And that was confusing it. It's just a little bit like this. Apple Watch seems to be better at doing that. I mean, I don't.
It's interesting how you find if you're enjoying the experience of using a product, you find yourself learning new skills and new muscle memory. And when I have the Moto on, yes, I can activate by turning it. But now when I raise my wrist, if I have my other hand free, I just sort of non-thinkingly just tap the screen so it's instantly available. And when I get the information, I put my hand over to sleep it immediately, just like snapping a pocket watch closed. It's like it's not I have to do that. It's just that why wouldn't? It's just the habit that I got into, and it's not inconvenient in the least. So as I said before, it's going to be very interesting to talk to people after they've been wearing it for a month and they realize that they have adapted to the watch and the watch has adapted to them, and it's probably going to be a much better experience for them than it was on the first weekend.
I do recommend iMore's 28, Serenity wrote this, Apple Watch tips and tricks you should know if you want more. There's lots of good ones in here. I have yet to use Power Reserve mode. Haven't had to. It's gone all the way.
I hit it that one day. The one thing you need to know about Power Reserve is when it's on that, it will not do the raise to wake thing. You do have to tap the button.
Okay.
Yeah, and you have to basically reboot it to get out of it.
The important tip is don't exercise, because if you don't exercise, then you'll have plenty of battery life all day long.
I also love it, and I did not know this. Thank you, Serenity. There, you can do a screenshot, much like you do on the iPhone, by pressing both buttons at the same time. Has anybody?
There you go.
Has anybody sent you any of those creepy 3D emojis?
Yes, quite a lot. And though when I first saw those, it just screamed Yahoo from the 90s to me. And like, boy, those guys like tongues a lot.
Yeah. But you like it, huh?
No, I mean, I'm still not a huge fan of them. Like, I think the hands move too little and the faces move too much. But, you know, it's general. Because there's the thing. If Apple does exactly the same thing every year, we say they're boring and not innovating. If they do new things, we say they're doing silly things. And I think you need to experiment. And some of it I'm not going to like, and I'm okay with that. To Andy's point earlier, you know, like when you love somebody, everything about them you find is desirable. When you hate somebody, you dislike it. So if you have a good experience, you find the next one delightful or informative. If you have a bad one, you get more and more frustrated. So I'm trying to keep this balanced opinion where I'm just noting, I don't like that, do like this, without letting it sort of emotionally affect me too much.
Yeah. Nice. That's something that impressed me about the emojis.
There you go, Jason. I'm showing the emojis here real quick.
And I'm not a big fan of them myself. Is I was impressed that when you send them to someone who doesn't have a watch or a phone, they are still animated, at least on iMessage side. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, they're animated GIFs, so they work everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not as well. Nice, they're not as creepy.
They're creepy everywhere, Leo.
They're pretty creepy. It's Uncanny Valley creepy is what it is.
They're just, I mean, and so it's funny because a lot of people were saying Apple was too flat, but now here you have button borders in a lot of places. Again, you have 3D rendered textures.
Yeah.
And you know, Apple's not using one design language. And when you look at what Microsoft is doing with Modern or Metro, whatever they're calling it now, and Google with Material, they're really trying to have a consistent experience across screens, and Apple is trying to do something different on every screen. And I like that, again, I like that we have both options.
What's interesting is you could pick like an in-between state for an emoji. Like that's like
they kind of, yeah,
it's kind of
so,
weird.
So many tongues.
But can we at least like note that, is this what people want to be doing, spending minutes staring at their wrist to figure out which of these 100 million emojis to select? It is fun, and you shouldn't laugh at people who are enjoying the experience. But
my mom is going to do it always.
Yikes!
Yeah,
yeah, it's like.
But you really can send nuance, you see. There's some real nuance in the emojis.
This is the feature for that person at the office that always had that horrible signature with like, yep. Yeah.
Put me on your joke mailing list, please. So, I beg of you.
So basically you're saying that this emoji feature is the what the email forwards were in 1993.
Yep.
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 I think so.
Just breaking news coming in. Twitter stock trading has been halted. As Twitter drops dramatically, I'm not sure what's going on. Are they doing results? There must be. But stock trading halted just moments ago on Twitter.
I think possibly the earnings were leaked before.
Uh-huh. Twitter plunges after early earnings leak report.
The Duke brothers are trying to corner the frozen concentrated orange juice market.
No, I'm not getting your laptop.
Okay. So you know. Yeah, I'm not sure what that is, but that's all right. There's nothing to see here. Move along. The early leak from the Twitter investor relations site, or, well, maybe no leak, no hack. It's just been quickly, early, prematurely released. But big drop in quarter one revenue, $436 million, non-GAAP EPS, 7 cents a share. Okay, so there you go. Just giving you some breaking news. I suppose we should have other Mac news, Apple news. Let me see. We've got the quarterly results. We got the watch. 100% of Apple's U.S. facilities now powered from renewable energy. Nice. Although it's not clear whether that's because they're buying credits or they're actually using renewable
energy. I believe they're buying credits.
I think almost always that's what's the case. I do refer people to DisplayMate.com. Did you hear that piercing bell? I guess not. It's not that loud. You probably got something from, it's time for me to go. Time
stand up
for security now. That's the other thing. Every hour, it's a little, but you can turn that off.
I just got one and I am standing up. So that's the kind of stuff that I think needs to
be. I think that that's not bad. I want to be more healthy and anything that can help me do that. And I discovered the Jawbone Up and the Nike Fuel Band. All of those did help me. Encourage me to take that extra step, you know, as you're close and so forth.
I want Game Center integration so that you and I can compete over standing up.
Renee has stood up for 32% more often than you have.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll do our picks of the week. You might be surprised by Andy's. I'm just going to say that. But first, a word from LegalZoom.com. You know, when we started the business 10 years ago now, I talked to, you know, as you do when you start a new business, you get advice from friends who've been there before. One of the first people I called was Kevin Rose, who's started many a business and in even more since then. He said, Incorporate. And that actually echoes advice Ron Wayne had when Apple was founded. He's the reason Ron Wayne bailed out. He said, these guys weren't a corporation. They were just a company. That meant anybody could be sued for anything. He didn't want to take the risk. So I immediately created an LLC, and it was very affordable and very easy. I didn't go to a law firm. I went to LegalZoom.com at a great price. We're still using the documents that generated 10 years ago worked great. Here's 5 things you can count on when you use LegalZoom for your business. They are reliable. More than 1 million people, including me, have trusted LegalZoom to help start their business, to incorporate, form an LLC, a nonprofit too, by the way, if you want to do that. Get a DBA and more. LegalZoom can help you get started the right way. They also have experience doing this. They've been helping business owners for more than a decade. You can count on LegalZoom for all the details and great support. The right people are on hand to answer your questions, all based in the United States. And by the way, I know LegalZoom's not a law firm, but they have built a network of independent attorneys at a fixed rate available in most states. And there were questions I had, like what state should we incorporate? And I even considered making a an educational 501c3, the nonprofit. And being able to ask an attorney, you know, the pros and cons of each are great. Finally, no surprises. LegalZoom provides complete transparency with upfront pricing and customer reviews and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. If it's time to make a will, if it's time to start your business, if it's time to get a health care power of attorney, all of the stuff that you need to do, you don't really need to go to a high-priced law firm. You need LegalZoom. Make the smart choice. LegalZoom.com. Do me a favor, though. Enter MBW at checkout. You'll save. LegalZoom.com. Don't forget to use that promo code, MBW. Not only will you save, that's how they know you heard it here. LegalZoom.com. Andrew Inatko, your pick of the week, my friend.
Well, I knew that you stinkers would all have Apple Watches, and I would not. And so I wanted to talk about wearables a little bit. And I have finally gotten a chance to try out Microsoft Band. And so it's a very, very interesting product for a lot of good reasons. I've been wearing it daily since the weekend. And there's something that didn't really occur to me about the strength of this design until I started wearing it and until I started seeing other people wearing it. The thing is that this presents itself as a fitness band. And really, I think that's in terms of its design, it really is designed to be a fitness band with extra features on it as opposed to a smartwatch. And the value of that is that you can walk around and people are used to seeing like a black rubberish band on your wrist. That leaves this wrist free that you can actually wear whatever you want. So you can still wear your grandfather's watch. You can still wear the stylish watch that you absolutely love. You can still wear whatever else you have on this wrist. But you still get what are some of the marquee features of a smartwatch, that is fitness tracking and notifications from your phone. Works with iOS, works with Android. It has a couple extra features if you're wearing it with a Windows phone device, but for our purposes, it works fine with iOS. It will communicate iOS notifications just fine. It also communicates with a fitness and health app that Microsoft has for iOS that will track a really nice array of information, not only heart rate, but also oxygen saturation levels, temperature. It also do UV index, and it also has GPS built right into it. And what Renee said about calibrating the pedometer on your Apple Watch, this does the exact same thing. It has GPS built in. Obviously, using GPS will drain the battery. So what they do say is that when you do your first like walks or runs, if you leave the GPS on for the first couple of days that you do that, it will learn what the length of your stride is, and that it will then, you can turn the GPS off. It will not track your location, but it will give you a better, it'll calibrate your stride. It'll give you more accurate distances. But if you do keep the GPS turned on while you bike or while you walk or run, it will, of course, record a breadcrumb trail of exactly your exact route that you can then like download to your computer and then overlay on a map and figure out stuff like that. I like it in that it works in a way that the Fitbit that I tried for about a month didn't, because all the Fitbit did was saying you've got 1 dot, 2 dot, 3 dot, 4 dot, 5 dots. This will give you that same wealth of information that you get from a Moto 360 or to a lesser extent. The less information that you get from an Apple Watch, but still valuable actual numbers to show you how well you're progressing toward your progress. It will also, after it's been able to look at your level of fitness and activity for a couple of weeks, then it can actually say, okay, I'm going to tailor a workout for you. So you can actually follow the instructions that's giving you on this band to get to a positive workout that keeps your heart level up and gives you actual valuable ongoing results. It's less of a commitment than having a real for real. This is the one watch that I'm allowed to wear, because if I wear a watch on both wrists, I look even more like a dork than I do with a fitness band on one wrist and a wristwatch on the other one. A couple of disadvantages. Among them, that this doesn't automatically light up when you turn it, so you actually have to push a clicky button to get it to light up. Also, the user interface is horizontal, so it's not like you can do like this and then you have to go like this to read it. So you have to sort of learn how to, you know, read it in a vertical orientation. And also, it gets a full 2 days of battery life on a single charge. But they make that magic happen by putting part of the battery inside the band. So obviously, it's chunkier than a fitness band. It's also not quite as comfortable to wear as a watch or as a fitness band. It's not uncomfortable, but there's definitely a presence on your wrist that you don't feel otherwise. But as a device that you wear 24 hours a day, it'll also do things like sleep tracking. It was very, very cool. I've had apps before that check your sleep, but not the kind that will say, oh, by the way, you actually, good morning, are you up now? Good, okay, you slept for an actual 5.2 hours. And now, just like any other number for fitness, wow, you know what? If I work hard, I bet I can break that record and sleep for 7 hours tomorrow night. You know what? I'm going to do what it takes to make sure that I break my record of 10 hours. So,
I'm sorry. I'm just moving because my watch told me to. Keep going, Andy.
There you go. Don't let your Apple Watch get inside your head, man. That's exactly what Apple wants.
Does the Microsoft Watch do that?
Yeah. But as I said, I like the fact that there are four major platforms, each with four different perspectives. This one being that, look, if you wear a watch on this wrist, you've got another free wrist they can use for fitness and notifications. This is a good way to do that. It's platform agnostic and it costs $200. This is also very much a 1.0. I don't think Microsoft built enough of them to anticipate a high demand, because that's how they managed to sell out of them so quickly. So they were hard to find after their initial launch in October or November.
I think new batches come in from time to time, though, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's not because everybody wants one. It's because they have not been building very many of these. Right. But again, if your resistance to wearing a smartwatch is that, but I like the watch that I have right now and I don't want to commit to all this new software and all this sort of stuff, this will give you at least 50 to 60% of what is really cool about having a smartwatch without having to, again, give up your really classy watch that you really, really like. I mean, I love this watch. It took me like 2 or 3 months to find, of looking for my first nice, you know, as in didn't buy it in a plastic case for $50 watch. And I miss it when I don't get to wear it all the time. So I do actually a day a week, or maybe even 2 days a week, I'll put this on simply because I enjoy it as much as I like my smartwatch. But this allows me to have sort of best of both worlds. So I'm not saying that this is the perfect device. It is a 1.0, but it is something worth looking at if you suspect that you can benefit from having a health tracker and you want it to do a little bit more than just simply annoy you and buzz on your wrist when it thinks you're being too much of a sit-down person.
Great pick. Paul Thurrott loves his too. It's actually kind of almost a surprise that actually Microsoft did something that's really unique in this space.
I don't know. This is one of those times where you think, I don't know who they hired or fired 4 or 5 years ago, but they started to figure out things that were that allow them to do some cool stuff from time to time.
Yeah. Mr. Adam Christensen of the MacCast, MacCast.com. What do you got for us?
Yep. I'm going to pick an oldie but a goodie, but I think it's become somewhat irrelevant in this day and age with our thinner and thinner notebooks. So something I've used for years is a couple products from Radtech. They're the sleeves, and this is the purple one, but you can get it in a bunch of different colors, red, blue, gray, black. It's a microfiber screen protector. This one's what they call the screen saver.
Don't I get one of these every time I buy a new MacBook?
Well, if you buy the same MacBook, like, here's one thing I wanted to comment on them. So I kept buying the 15-inch form factor, and it didn't really change too much in thickness. So I had the same set for probably 8 years before I think it started to finally break down. So they lasted very long. But, yeah, you might need to get them each time. But what it does is, you know, you type on your keyboard, right? You're going to leave dirt and oils behind. With now that laptops are so thin, you put any force on the outside of that, it's going to gently, you know, press down on the screen, maybe go into the keys, and then you get that sort of key pattern, oily key pattern on your screen. So the screensaver protects from that. And then they also have what's called the sleeve, which goes over the outside. And I like that one because it protects the outer case of my MacBook. It's a nice form-fitting sleeve. And then I can slide it in there. I don't have to worry about it when I'm sliding it into my bag. I actually put my iPad right next to my laptop in that main compartment because I've got the cover on it. I know they're not going to scratch each other up. And they're really durable. They're really well made. You might see the price and go, oh, that's expensive. But I guarantee you, once you have these things, you're going to love them. And what's great about the little one on the keyboard, too, is you can use it as a nice microfiber cloth to clean the screen and stuff like that. So they're always there. They're always handy. You always have them with you. I love this product. And like I said, I've used it for years. And I think now that laptops are getting thinner and thinner, they're becoming even more important.
I'm thinking the MacBook, this will be a must-have.
Yeah. So love them, and it's a great product, and they've been around in the Mac community for years, RadTech.
About 15
they do,
bucks.
They do great stuff, yeah.
For the screensaver. Thank you, Adam. You've been around for, how long has MacCast been around for?
10 years.
Yeah.
In the 11th year.
One of the original shows. You started in 2004 then, huh?
Yeah, December 13th, 2004 was the first episode.
Wow. So one of the oldest Macintosh podcasts and still one of the best.
I think so.
Yeah. MacCast.com. We love it. Mr. Rene Ritchie, do you have a pick for us?
I do. I have a couple, actually, and they're very similar. One of the things I like most about the Apple Watch is remote control. I already have, the Hue app, so I can turn on and off these lights behind me, and we've been doing that for a while. But there's some really great iOS apps like DJ for iPhone, which I've picked before, but right now it's free because they just launched their watch extension. So you can load up your iPhone with all the music you want to DJ and then sit there. And they have one of the best interactivity models I've seen on the Apple Watch so far, where you can press a button and it'll start to intelligently know when to switch between songs and when to do cuts and all these different things. And it works really well. So if you're, even if you're not, like, I don't know much about music. I'm not a DJ. I'm sure DJs really love this. But just if I have friends over and I'm sitting there cooking and I want to quickly change something, I can press a button on my watch. I don't have to go and pull my phone out. Again, it's all that convenience factor. And Pacemaker is the same. It lets you cue up a bunch of music on your Apple Watch, sorry, on your iPhone, and then with really bright, intelligent, interactive controls on your Apple Watch, it lets you just do this sort of, it makes you look good in front of your friends, Leo, like you have better music sense and savvy and DJ abilities than you actually have. And every app that makes us look good, we kind of feel a little bit happy about. So again, these to me show that, with really, really smart developers, you can do a lot of really cool things with the Apple Watch.
Do you think you'll ever really use DJ on your watch?
I use it because if you have a music app, it looks all right. But if you have double turntables on your iPhone or iPad and you're sitting there just nodding your head like you know what you're doing and pressing a button and it makes an awesome switch, that's 3 points for you, Leo. I mean, it makes you look good.
You got to wear your headphones half on half, your Beats headphones
half
on half.
You just put them on and you just move your head like this and your other wrist is free. You tap it and everyone thinks you're a master mixer. He's controlling our audio experience from the kitchen while making croissants. The man's a miracle worker.
DJ is amazing on the iPad. And you probably already have it, so might as well just put it on your watch.
And if you don't, it's free right now.
And it's free. Yeah. All of this stuff is because they haven't figured out how to charge.
Well, but the iPhone app, which is usually several bucks.
Oh, is it free right too?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So if you haven't got it yet, and you're looking for a really... Yeah, and it's a cool way just to display music on your iPhone. You don't forget everything else.
Yeah.
Because they take for skeuomorphic fans, they take the actual voice print and put it over the album so you can see the grooves like you would a traditional record. Which,
come on, knock that off. Fire.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, the algorithm guys have serious game.
I'm going to download that right now. I've been laughing at it because it seems like such a silly thing to have a watch interface to a DJ turntable.
Well, part of the new update they did, I forget the name. I think it's Philip or Pioneer, whatever, the big turntable system almost every DJ's use, they actually opened up and let them integrate with it. So for professional DJs, they can now use their iPhone, their iPad to control like hardcore equipment. And you have the glance on your Apple Watch. If you do need to reach for that beverage or, talk to that person at the booth and you want to just tap a button quickly and cover yourself, all set.
I want to thank one of our viewers. Yesterday we were doing iPad Today, and one of our viewers had said, how come you guys never pick Skyforce 2014 as your app cap? So I immediately downloaded iPad or iPhone, and wow, this is a great, fun, top-down scroller. If you ever played Zaxxon, you'll recognize kind of the style of this, but the graphics are great. It's loading. This is the first time I've loaded it on the iPhone. I played on the iPad. Great music, great fun, very exciting game. In-app purchases, $1.99 to remove ads, although I haven't seen many ads. It really is a lot of fun, and boy, the graphics are great. This is Skyforce, 2 words, 2014, from Infinite Dreams. It's the 10th anniversary edition. You may remember, I guess it must have been arcade versions of this game, right?
Touch the screen and move your finger to control.
I know. Now watch, we're going to fly through the environment. I don't know if you saw it, but Mario is somewhere on an island. We've got to rescue him and, of course, shoot incoming airplanes as we're going, gather stuff, power-ups.
None of those crew members had families.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. What are you?
I'm sure your
what are
mission
you?
Is.
Come on.
I'm just saying.
Come on.
The projection of power for foreign policy is sometimes comes at too great a cost, Leo. Of what cost to our national character is this?
Oh,
game,
no
Leo?
Bits were harmed in the making of this game. Come on. It's fun.
I understand they're all Hitler clones.
All Hitler clones, exactly.
Palpatine clones.
Oh, there's the boss.
Hitler clones either.
Watch out for the boss. He's tough, tough, tough. Anyway, this is a fun game. I always look for games that are native to the touch interface, and this is actually a really good one for that, because all you have to really do is hold your finger on the screen and go around. I showed you a kind of a... Whoops. Whoa, there's a laser. Oh, no. Skyforce 2014. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Backbreak Weekly, the first in the Apple Watch era. I mentioned this in our Before You Buy review. I remember, you know, the day before, the eve of the iPad coming out, the eve of the iPhone coming out, thinking, after tomorrow, everything's different. I don't know if you could say the same for the Apple Watch, but...
We were so naive last week.
It's almost charming.
So young, so innocent.
So young, so innocent. again, great thanks to Adam Christensen for pioneering the Mac podcast and continuing MacCast for 10 years. You were at Nick. What do you do these days?
I am self-employed. I am a podcaster. I do a little bit of web development.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah, work for myself. I'm solo. You know, no big network or anything like that, but we get by.
I have to say, did you work on Snapseed? Was that one of your things when you were in Nick?
Well, I was their web developer, so I did all their e-com and stuff like that. One thing I'm proud of, though, is I went and looked at their shopping cart that they're using to sell the Nick
stuff
over at Google. I think it still has the same look. I don't know if the code
that would be awesome.
The same,
your code is running on the Google servers now.
Wow. I was proud that they didn't change it. So,
Snapseed did just recently update, and it is absolutely the go-to now photo editing app. I thought Aviary was going to give them a little trouble, but boy, I love the new Snapseed.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about the new UI, but
it's different. But boy, is it powerful! I love it. Thank you, Adam. Everybody should go to MacCast.com. Subscribe today. Renee Ritchie at iMore.com. If you want to know about the watch, he's got the guys and gals on it. The most articles per pound of any Apple blog, iMore.com. And of course,
we don't drink you under the table, Leo. We just write articles.
You're writing us under the table. And podcasting, too. A lot of great podcasts. If you go to iMore, you'll find them in the podcast.
Debug
section.
Is back this week with Horace Dedya as the guest, because he used to be a developer.
I love Horace. Oh, is he awesome? Very smart guy. Good. We'll make sure to listen. Andy Iannocco, he's not wearing an Apple Watch, but someday.
I'm not cowing down to the man.
Of course, you can catch all his work at the Chicago Sun-Times. Did you order one, or are you just kind of waiting, or what is the deal?
No, because I'm confident that when my turn comes, they'll send me a review unit. And the fact that I was away at a conference and thinking that, okay, so I'm going to have to, like, not go to this party and stand by to get in there, not in the first 5 minutes, but in the first 30 seconds, to spend $350 that I could be spending on, like, airfare to another conference. And at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I'm going through a philosophical thing these days where it's like, how valuable is it for me to have a review out in the first 3 days versus I value the 30 days that I will be able to spend with it and whatever I will be able to write after those 30 days. And which is not to say that I'm not incredibly jealous of Groover or the people who had them early. It's fine.
Yeah, I just feel
it's
like,
fine.
Come on, this is the Chicago Sun-Times here. This is one of the hosts of MacBreak Weekly. This is not, I just don't understand Apple's review policy. I really don't.
It's not an entitlement. I'm pretty sure this just because there's an audience that I have that they're already reaching elsewhere.
Apparently.
It's not an entitlement. I'll get it whenever it's my turn to get it. That's fine.
Apparently. Makes me mad.
No, it shouldn't. It doesn't make me mad. Why should it make you mad?
Because I'm in the same boat. That's why. Actually, I'll never get a review unit. That's the boat I'm in. I'm in the boat behind your boat.
Well, you got hand tied bow tie money, man.
I'm on a balsa wood raft 400 feet behind
bow
you.
Bow ties are cool.
Mm-hmm. I tie them myself with my own two little hands.
Leo's a time lord.
Very nice.
I decided I want to look more like Doctor Who. Who doesn't, after all? Thank you, gentlemen.
Sensible people want to look like Doctor Who. Nonsensible people do not want to look like Doctor Who.
I am now grappling with which wrist I should wear this thing on. Thanks, Renee. And by the way,
Adam, that wasn't me.
That was me.
Oh, thanks, Adam.
Don't heap that on Renee.
And by the way, Renee, if I turn off the now I don't know how to even get out of this. What am I doing? Where am I? Help me. Help me, Obi-Wan.
Are you stuck in the game?
No. If I turn off activate on wrist. No, what do I want to turn off? Wrist detection? It sounds like that's a negative. It says when this is on, Apple Watch will automatically show you the time and latest alerts when you raise your wrist. Right? I wanted to turn that off. But if you're using a passcode, wrist detection locks your watch when you're not wearing it, so your information stays secure. If I turn this off, does my information become insecure?
I haven't tried that. I'll do that. I'll give that a shot. I don't think so, because Trinity's been using it, and she's quite secure.
But that's the setting we're supposed to turn off. Okay. Oh. See, and then it says...
I'm not touching that one.
No. Your Apple Pay cards will be removed.
Also, maybe that's the wrong one. I'll double check.
Boy, that's really the wrong one.
I'll find it. Yeah, because she's still using Apple Pay.
Then there's activate on wrist raise, but you don't get to choose... You don't get to turn it off. You only get to choose what you see.
Yeah, I'll find the right article for you.
Oh, it's in an article. Well, I should just probably read the Apple Watch FAQ. Yeah, imore.com. I've heard of that. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on live.twit.tv. Love it if you're in the chat room at irc.twit.tv during the show, because as you can see, we pay attention. We listen, and it's valuable information for us. By the way, chat room tells me, Andy, that you'll get better battery life if you turn your Microsoft Band facing wrist side, facing in.
So it only picks up every third heartbeat.
I don't know.
Yeah, I've only had this for I've not mastered the tips and tricks of this yet.
Apparently,
I've also had someone tell me that's easier to read if you have the screen on the inside.
Yeah, that's
and maybe it's also harder for other people to see your notifications if you've got it on the inside too. So I will definitely move it around like that. Thank you very much for that tip.
See, chat room. See, we do listen. We do. If you can't be here live, though, don't worry. We have on-demand audio and video after the fact always at twit.tv/MBW, as we do for all shows. And you can subscribe on iTunes or the podcast app on your iPhone and iPad or Overcast or whatever you use, because we're everywhere you are, including those great Twit apps, which we don't take credit for. Our great third-party developers in the community have made those on every platform, including Roku. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you later. Now, get back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.